Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I'm sort of paraphrasing what he said here, but he's like, I've worked in the auto industry long enough to see like us get like wasted by the Asian and European automakers. And like if China shows up, like we're not going to recover from that ever. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. This week, we're digging into Ford CEO Jim Farley's problem with big battery EVs. Plus, we'll look at Trump's freeze on EV charger funding and debate whether EVs with gas engines are really the future after all. How's it going, Patrick? You have had an eventful week this week. You were driving a new car. Are you allowed to tell us about it, or will we have to only hear about your travel woes?
I'm coming off of a long week of traveling. I'm back in upstate New York where I live right now. Yesterday I was in Palm Springs, California, which, you know, has considerably less snow than where I'm at, driving the new 2025 Hyundai Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 5 XRT, its off-road version. And yes, there's an embargo on when we can talk about that car. I don't think I'm breaking that by saying that I liked it. I've always liked the Ioniq 5. It's got a Tesla plug now, so it's even better. It's the off-road version's kind of like an electric Subaru Crosstrek or something. It's good. It was great. I'm excited to tell everyone about it, and not super excited to be back in like 20 degree weather and probably 3 or 4 straight days of snow again.
Yeah, I love Palm Springs. I've only been there once, and I think I recognized from that photo you sent me, you were in that really cool mid-century kind of neighborhood with all those awesome little houses.
Yeah, I purposely took the Ioniq 5 in. They have a couple of neighborhoods that are like that in that town, and just I found houses that nobody was living in. There's a few that are for sale. Decided to look like completely insane, but got some cool photos of the car in front of that and out in the desert and stuff. So it was a nice time. Nice break from being in front of a computer all day, but now we're back to reality. But as always, we got a lot to talk about this week. I think we should probably start with where Ford was at in 2024. And there's good news and not so good news. Ford reported its Q4 and 2024 earnings last week, announcing it earned $5.9 billion in net income for the full year, but also lost $5.1 billion through its electric vehicle division, which it calls Model E. Not to be confused with Mach-E, by the way. But Ford breaks out the financial results of its electric car division separately from its other vehicles. And they did this in hopes that they would kind of be seen as a startup and they could show their progress for making EVs profitable and getting battery costs down. That's kind of backfired on them because all of Wall Street does now is beat them up over their EV costs. So this has led to a lot of criticism for Ford that it's kind of trying this EV strategy that's like continually losing a lot of money. I think they're especially kind of getting killed on battery costs, which is an important part of what we're going to talk about today. One of the most interesting things on that call with Ford CEO Jim Farley, who we like a lot. We're Farley fans at Inside EVs, generally speaking. He kind of has come out swinging lately against like big battery EVs, like big SUVs, maybe pickup trucks that use like these huge battery cells. He doesn't think the economics work. He doesn't think Ford's going to ever really be successful or profitable with them. And he said that for what he calls regular retail customers, like just ordinary consumers and civilians, large electric trucks and SUVs have, quote, unresolvable economics. Let's hear what the CEO himself had to say about this.
These customers have very demanding use cases for an electric vehicle. They tow, they go off-road, they take long road trips. These vehicles have worse aerodynamics and they're very heavy, which means very large and expensive batteries. Retail customers have shown that they will not pay any premium for these large EVs, making them a really tough business case given the expense in the batteries.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear from Ford, because that's obviously a huge part of their business, is making big pickup trucks and big SUVs that, when they have a gas engine in them, they make them a lot of money. And yet there are these really big issues with them as EVs. And I mean, just to clarify, he says, you know, this is only for retail EVs. So like ones that regular people buy. They do see a future for commercial EVs, you know, pickups and vans and stuff that a business might use, because it's kind of a different use case. Because, you know, these are companies, these are customers that maybe they have charging at like their office or at a depot. It's just like a different thing than trying to sell a really expensive EV with a giant battery to a regular person who, like, instead of that, could just go out and buy a gas powered one. And I think, I mean, just look at the F-150 Lightning, which is Ford's electric pickup truck, and you'll see how the economics of big battery EVs don't work. You have to pay at least $70,000 to get the extended range battery with 320 miles of range. And like, you know, if you're buying an EV, that's probably the one that you're going to want to get. You want to get that 300 plus miles, not the like mid 200s ones that cost less. And so it's just like not a great deal when you compare a $70,000 F-150 Lightning to a, you know, gas-powered F-150.
Yeah, which a lot of their customers were doing. Or they looked at the F-150 Hybrid, which actually sells really well for Ford. It's a bit of the best of both worlds, and you don't have the range anxiety. I'd add, 320 miles of range for the extended range battery. It's a bit of a misnomer. Like, I think these days, like in 2025, 300 miles of range is kind of table stakes for most cars. In the last Rivian truck I drove was like 420. Like on the road, functionally, it was less than that, but it was a hell of a lot more than 320. And also, like, the efficiency sucks on those trucks at Ford. Like, I love the Lightning. I actually really enjoy that truck. I like driving it. But if you've got, you know, like a highway trip ahead of you and you've got a plane to catch and you're kind of banking on like having the exact amount of range you need to get there, that's a real crapshoot, because it bleeds highway range and it's not efficient. That's a very specific sounding scenario, right? Ask me how I know that, because I kind of lived that venture once. I did make my flight though, but it kind of shows the challenges they're having, right?
Yeah, and I think you can even, I mean, just look at the sales numbers. I think this is really interesting because, you know, back a few years ago when the F-150 Lightning came out, everybody, me included, maybe you too, assumed that, like, you take America's favorite pickup truck or America's favorite type of vehicle and make it electric, and like, we're off to the races. Like, boom, everybody's going to start buying EVs. And that didn't really happen. I think a big part of it is exactly what we're talking about, which is the range is tough in a big electric truck when you're trying to like tow something, and you have to pay a ton just to get one that has like the bare minimum of that 300 miles of range or so. And there was a time in late 2023, Ford said that it was going to ramp up F-150 Lightning production to 150,000 units a year, which is like a lot. That's more than any other EV that's not a Tesla right now, right? Then they dialed that back. And so last year in 2024, they ended up selling around 33,000, which is like more than the year before. Like, that's good for electric trucks these days. But that ain't 150,000 units, you know? So they clearly could not capture nearly as many customers as they thought they would.
And the battery is a problem here. That's why it's so expensive. That's why it takes so long to charge. That's why the range isn't great. Also, because it's so heavy. The big battery thing is a challenge, and it's something we're going to talk about throughout this episode today. Do big battery EVs really work? And there was a story we had this week. A BMW executive recently kind of took the same position as Ford and said, "Yeah, I don't see the economics working there." Because remember, you've got a lot more in the way of minerals needed to create this battery. And that's super expensive right now. And that also takes longer to charge too, whether you're using, you know, a level two at home or you're doing a DC fast charger. This stuff is really kind of kind of a pain. I think that one of the few that's sort of banking on this right now is General Motors, because they have like the GMC Hummer, the new Escalade IQ, like the Silverado EV and GMC Sierra EV. And like some of those models like go as high as like 212 kilowatt hour batteries, which is like the EV equivalent of like running like a V10 engine or something. Like 212 kilowatt hours is about 3x the battery in my Kia, for some context here. So between costs, efficiency not being good, weight being terrible, and just the energy use, I think there's a lot of people out there that kind of look at this like, you know what, maybe this isn't the right approach for bigger vehicles. But as we have discussed often, that doesn't mean an end to electrification, period, for these big vehicles, right, Tim?
Yeah, I think Ford, you know, Jim Farley talked about this on the earnings call, and we're going to talk about this later in the episode, but a big kind of promising trend, I think, is EREVs, extended range EVs, which are battery electric platform with a gas generator, basically, that extends its range. And that could be, you know, one avenue, one solution to solve this kind of big battery problem. But, and I think one thing to underscore here, this isn't just a problem with EVs. This is like upending the way that these big American automakers do business completely. Yeah. You know, they make a huge portion of their profits on big SUVs and big pickup trucks. And the reason they can do that is because it doesn't cost like that much more money to build a bigger vehicle than a smaller one, but you can charge like a crap ton more for it, for like an F-150 Lariat or whatever, King Ranch, than like a smaller, more practical SUV. That was always the kind of economics that these companies were built on.
Plus now, all the options, you know, you throw on a Larry and all the luxury stuff, that just you know, ticks the boxes up higher for them. So it's just money printing, and it doesn't work as well for EVs. You know,
it doesn't work as well for EVs because before, with a gas car, the gas vehicle, you know, it's like a little bit of extra money and like sheet metal and stuff, and boom, you have like, I'm simplifying, but like boom, you have a big pickup truck. Now, if you want to make a big pickup truck that's an EV, it's not just a little bit of extra materials, it's like twice the battery size, and that is the single most costly component of any EV. And so you're talking about like thousands, you know, $10,000, $20,000 to put a giant battery in these things, and it just like totally screws up the economics of these companies.
Yeah, it's wild, right? And it's, I think people don't realize the extent to which like Ford, General Motors, and big parts of Stellantis are just like truck companies now. Whatever, I don't know, Camaros or Mustangs or whatever they sell are salad dressing compared to like the trucks that really make the money. And like, these aren't that efficient either. Like if you drive a huge pickup truck, you know, it's a gas guzzler too, but that's less of a problem because gas is cheap right now and gas stations are plentiful. But like, you know, all these companies, like they got their asses kicked by the Japanese and the Koreans. They don't even make sedans and small cars really anymore. Not like they used to. So like their whole economics are based on gas trucks. So if they can't figure this out, they probably don't have a future. But also, like, again, I don't disagree with like what Farley said here. I don't disagree with the problems with big batteries. I actually think, even as an EV guy, like maybe for some of these bigger vehicles, like hybrids are the better way to go. I recommend people who are considering, you know, an electric truck, like you should probably look at an F-150 hybrid also. That might suit your needs better. And if you think of it in terms of adding electrification to cut gas use and cut emissions, like that's a win. Like those going from pure gas to hybrid too is a win. Like, so I don't want to rule this out completely, but it's like you kind of have to recognize realities when it comes to like huge electric vehicles here. I mean, do you think this will get any better as battery costs go down, Tim, or is the problem going to stay the same?
I mean, I think it has to get better. Like, we've seen battery costs come down by a huge margin. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in the last like 10 or 15 years, battery costs are way cheaper than they used to be. So like,
yeah,
there's a future where like you can put a big ass battery in a Ford truck and it won't cost like way more than the gas equivalent. But I think now and probably forever, like efficiency is going to be a really important part of the game here. And we've talked about this before, but it's kind of proving people like Lucid CEO Peter Rawlinson, right? Because he's kind of built this whole company. It's not profitable yet, Who knows where it'll end up, but like the whole game plan, the whole like philosophy of Lucid is to make EVs that are super efficient so you can use fewer batteries, so you can reduce battery costs. And if you compare the F-150 Lightning to something like, not exactly an equivalent, but like the Lucid Gravity, right? Their new big three-row SUV, this thing gets 450 miles of range from a battery pack that's roughly the same size as the F-150 Lightning that gets like a little over 300 miles of range.
Yeah.
So you can see a future where like the companies that are able to engineer efficiency into these vehicles are the ones that start to make more money and start to win when it comes to the bigger ones, to the bigger bigger types of cars. I will say even Rawlinson has said that like pickup trucks, it doesn't work. He was like,
yeah,
pickup trucks are really hard to electrify right now.
Yeah. I asked him once, like point blank, is Lucid going to make like a pickup truck? And I think it'd be cool if they did. It can be featured in country music songs. You know, that would be, it'd be exciting. Yeah. Ford has had some big setbacks here. And which is kind of a shame because it was such an early mover in the American EV space. Like, you know, like start of this decade, he was out with the Mach-E, which is great, and the Lightning, which was really ambitious. And again, I like that vehicle a lot. Not taking off the way that they want it to. So last year they announced they're going to push back some plans, axe others. They're canceling a three-row electric SUV. Kind of sounded like a Kia EV9 competitor. That's not going to happen, or it's going to become hybrid. They're making another electric midsize truck. It's kind of a quasi-Lightning successor. That got pushed back a bit, but Ford's also working on this thing it calls the Skunk Works platform. It's done like Lockheed Martin, like a secret team is making this electric vehicle platform from the ground up, like the Chinese automakers do, like Tesla has done, and it is designed to do battle if BYD and NIO and XPeng, these other Chinese OEMs automakers come to market. So it's working on this ground up platform. Who knows if it'll ever see the light of day? I think that's going to be the real game changer moment if they can pull that off. So it's kind of figuring this stuff out and having some setbacks. But I know from hearing Farley talk about it, like he is serious. Like he's been really adamant with what I just said. He's like I'm sort of paraphrasing what he said here, but he's like, I've worked in the auto industry long enough to see like us get like wasted by the Asian and European automakers, and like if China shows up, like we're not going to recover from that ever. So I think he is serious, but like they've got some work to do to make sure it happens on their timeline, not somebody else's.
Ford's in this weird place where they don't actually have a new EV coming out for kind of a while. You know, this year,
yeah,
GM has a bunch of new ones launching, bunch like some Cadillacs. Other companies are launching new EVs.
Hyundai and Kia have a ton coming out.
Ford, which like you said, was kind of one of these early movers, 2025, it's just going to be the same as it was, the Mach-E and the Lightning. And then they have a commercial vehicle coming out in, I think, 2026, and then that new electric pickup truck in like 2027. So we're not really going to start to see the serious kind of next gen efforts from Ford for a couple of years. And we're going to have to see if like other companies just take this moment and run with it, and what sort of competitive position they're in once they can actually put these vehicles on the road.
2027 feels like 500 human years from our current moment, and not just two. And one question worth asking is, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now, where are those vehicles going to charge? And this past week, that seems a little bit more up in the air now. Tim, you want to talk about this potential EV charger funding freeze that you've been reporting on?
Yeah. It's another, it's more not great news out of the Trump transition for EVs. The headline here is that Trump's DOT has ordered basically a pause and review of the $5 billion National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, which we always call NEVI. This is the program created by the bipartisan infrastructure law that's supposed to fund thousands of EV charging stations across the country and, get more people into EVs by combating range anxiety. And now most of that funding that states thought they were entitled to is frozen. So this is a problem, and this is something we're keeping a close eye on. And I guess before we move forward, I will say, like, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. by Friday, who knows, by Friday when this episode drops, like, if this sounds out of date, that's why. Everything's been moving really fast in the Trump White House, so maybe they'll rescind it or they'll whatever. Leaving that open, I'm open to that possibility.
Yeah, it's every day is a new adventure, full of wonder and excitement with this crowd. Yeah, no, it's a wacky one, right? Because as you said, $5 billion is a very ambitious program. We're going to explain how it worked in a moment, but basically everybody was kind of counting on this. Automakers were sort of counting on this. Charging companies, certainly gas station companies, like they were taking these grants and investing big in adding chargers to places where people already fuel their vehicles. So kind of everybody's mad about this because it's all just like, well, do we keep going or not? Like, do we actually freeze? We follow it. The state of Michigan said it's going to hit pause for now. We think that there will almost certainly be legal challenges to this because there's a lot of ongoing legal disputes over what the Trump administration has been doing with federal funding lately, you know, kind of unilaterally freezing money that was already appropriated by Congress. A couple of federal judges have kind of slapped him on the wrist so far with this stuff. You know, one source I talked to, this person doesn't think that like a car company or a charging company, like a business, wants to be seen as standing against the administration. But it's highly possible that like Colorado or California, which is where my money's on for this, is gonna throw down instead. But it's, I think there's a bit of an atmosphere of wanting to express concern about this, but being afraid to speak out right now. So we're gonna see how that plays out here too. And what are policy experts telling you that you've been talking to, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, from people I've talked to and you know, from stories I've read, you know, the policy experts here and former like Biden DOT officials believe that this is probably illegal. There's nothing in the bipartisan infrastructure law that gives DOT the authority to rescind funds that they've already told states they can access. You know, we'll have to see how it plays out. Like, I'm not a lawyer here, but from what I can best understand, this is not the way that things are normally done. And there's a strong chance that the DOT can't legally do what it's doing.
By the way, I want to spike the football on behalf of my friend and colleague, Tim Levin, who broke this story last week, was the first to publish the DOT's memo on this. So thank you to all the sources out there who, or the outlets out there that cited Inside EVs for this, but go Tim, way to kick some ass. So yes.
Thanks.
Please tell us about the story that you broke, my man.
Yeah, that felt good coming from our scrappy little team.
Yeah.
I'll just give the broad strokes real quick just because it helps to understand what exactly the DOT did here. It'll be quick, I promise. So basically, for NEVI, Congress appropriated $5 billion. That's supposed to go out to states over 5 years, and then the states can take their little chunk of that money each year and decide what to do with it. Contracted out to EV charging operators to build charging stations in their state. The wrinkle here is that each state needs to submit a plan every year to the DOT in order to access their little chunk of the money for that year. Now, what DOT did is they revoked the guidelines, the guidance that states are supposed to follow for those plans, basically saying, well, all those plans that you already had approved are no longer approved because now we have, you know, we're working on different guidance. So that means that we're kind of in a limbo right now. A lot of this money that states thought they had, they do not have access to right now. The DOT said that they're going to put out new guidance in the spring. So that means there's like several weeks now with no guidance. The one, I guess, silver lining here, or one extra thing to know, is that DOT said that, you know, states that have contracts that are already ongoing, contracts that are signed with charging companies, like those are cool. They can still take federal money to fund those projects. But anything that hasn't been signed, and that's like billions of dollars, that's kind of frozen right now. Can't be used, according to the DOT.
Yeah, and you know, this program has gotten a lot of criticism for how slow the charger rollout has been. like there were some headlines last year, so, you know, only a few sites have been built so far. And like, yeah, I do think that's fair criticism. It's like a few things happened to create that situation. One is just, it's just normal government bureaucracy in general, but it's the process you mentioned. It's it starts with the federal government, then it goes to the states, then the state grants it out to contract companies who then have to work in the local communities to install these DC fast chargers, which is a lot of electricity. And then you're working with utilities, you're doing right-of-way, you're doing construction, you're getting permits. And there's no like one turnkey process, you might say, to make something that works in Chicago work in, like, I don't know, Katy, Texas or something. Just throwing an example out there. Like, it's different everywhere.
Yeah.
And it takes a while. But it was making progress, and it wasn't completely funding the EV charger infrastructure in America. Like, that's really growing fast on its own. And it's also important to remember that this money is allocated for years, but all of that is on hold. And, you know, you watched the interview on Fox News with Sean Duffy, the new DOT chief. And he actually said some stuff about this that we thought was pretty telling. Like, what did he say there?
Yeah, so we learned a little bit more about kind of the plans here for NEVI. Not a lot, but Duffy said that they're looking to, quote, recalibrate the program. I don't actually know what that really means, because a lot of the program is just like in the law, you know. It's unclear exactly what they can change. But he also did say something that you don't hear from every Trump official these days, which is that only Congress has the power to fully rescind the funding for NEVI. The executive branch, the DOT, can't just take the money back because they don't agree with EV charging anymore. So that's a good thing. He left the door open in an interesting way. He was like, look, you know, we're recalibrating it. Congress has the power to take back the money. And if they if Congress happens to act while this money, you know, while the program is paused, like, that's up to them. And I wonder if that's where this is heading. I don't know. I don't know if that would be legal either. You know, we'll have to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because, like, you know, anyone who's been watching the news lately, I think they've seen that the federal government's getting into a lot of murky gray area about what's called impounding, like the president's right to revoke funding allocated by Congress. In another interview, Senator Ted Cruz out of my home state of Texas, he said that he thinks that the administration is teeing up for like a Supreme Court decision on this, which I think would kind of blanket everything that's happened so far with the executive orders they're trying to make. And, you know, we bring that up here because, like, like it or not, electric vehicles are now embroiled in that. And we get a lot of emails about this. And some people were like, well, why are my tax dollars funding this stuff? And it's like, well, your tax dollars never quite funded gas stations themselves, but they artificially keep gasoline cheap. Like, they helped build roads and highways for car companies. We bailed out automakers. Loopholes and regulations like the chicken tax, you know, help support our automakers. So there is a lot of government policy that exists to help auto manufacturers and gas companies and petroleum companies, you know, well beyond what's happening for EVs. And the other argument is, if we don't do this, if we don't invest in the infrastructure, we will never be able to have and build the cars of the future. And we will be uncompetitive with the rest of the world, especially China. So all I can tell you is like what we said at the beginning, which is like a lot of folks who were making plans around this program are not happy from a business standpoint that the funds are being yanked right now. So I don't know. I tend to think that, like, with the EV tax credits, it's like, okay, cool. If you don't want to do this forever, like, we knew that it wasn't going to happen forever, let's do a more gradual phase out rather than pull the plug, just like phase it out more quickly, like, over time. And I was like, well, I think that's more than fair. That was probably going to happen anyway. So either way, we're keeping an eye on who fires the first lawsuit to challenge this and what happens with that, because it has a lot of implications.
Should we pivot to something a little bit more fun?
Yes, yes, it is. I promise. Tim and I are fun. It's not just the tariff impoundment happy hour and Inside EVs.
The tariff empowerment sad hour.
Yeah, it's like not, I'm not even drinking, like, because it's just sad and policy focused and depressing. We're gonna talk about something rad. We're gonna talk about EREVs, Tim. Let's talk about EREVs, buddy. EREVs, come
let's
on.
Let's go.
EREVs, come on. Yeah.
EREVs are essentially like an EV, but with a small gas generator that adds range and capability without actually driving the wheels. It sounds pretty weird, but there are actually a lot of automakers working on exactly this, like Ford and some others.
And I know that term, in the electric vehicle world, you get a lot of crap thrown at you, kilowatt hours, charging curves, and now it's EREVs too. But basically what this is, yeah, you start with an EV, you add a gas engine. All the gas engine does is recharge the battery and give you lots of extra range and make it so if you're on the road and you don't have someplace to plug in or you don't want to fast charge somewhere, you got to take a gas instead. And then you're back on the road. And since this gas engine isn't driving the wheels of the car, in theory, it should be a lot more efficient. It should be better on fuel economy. It should be better on emissions in general. So there's some really promising concepts that go with it. Also, I'm just going to add real fast. Like we're going to talk about some examples here too. Of course, Ram is working on one, and it's a 3.6 liter V6. Like that's just an engine. It's like this is like the most like Mopar thing ever. It's like no, this isn't like some little tiny thing. Like this is like an actual. It's a car engine, baby.
They would have gotten too much shit if they made it, you know, dinky and small, I guess.
Yeah, it's got to be macho. No, they actually said, I asked them why they went with that. They were like, it was for noise, vibration, harshness reasons. But yeah, do you want to talk about who's got some EREVs coming up or shall I dive into that?
No, I got it. Yeah, so we mentioned Ford, Hyundai. I'm learning that it's not Hyundai, that it's Hyundai.
Rhymes with Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, somebody in a YouTube comment was like, didn't you see the Hyundai rhymes with Sunday ads? And I was like, God damn it. Okay. I did not apparently.
I've been busy lately, okay?
Yeah. I think I was a child, but anyway. We got Ford, Hyundai, Ram, like you mentioned. Ram weirdly is, you know, uncharacteristically for the Stellantis company, they are weirdly beating everybody else to the punch when it comes to something in the kind of electric world. The Ram 1500 Ram Charger is coming out this year with a V6 generator, like you said, and 690 miles of combined range between the battery and the gas tank. So
yeah, baby.
You can see why this is kind of an appealing proposition for a big truck. Some others, Scout Motors. This is the new offshoot from Volkswagen that's making electric pickup trucks and SUVs, you know, rugged kind of off-road type vehicles. They're launching EREV versions of their debut EVs too. And they've proven pretty popular.
Yeah.
Scout CEO said recently that most of the reservations for these vehicles are for the EREV version, which they call Harvester, which is kind of a sick name given Scout's kind of history here.
Yeah, it's a callback name to some of the models they had in the 70s. And yeah, it's like overwhelmingly for that. I'll say also every time we write on Inside EVs about the Ram Charger, like it just blows up the site. Like people are so interested in that vehicle. And it's also pretty cool, this truck. Like it doesn't, you would never really know that it's you know, an electric or electrified vehicle. It looks like almost any other Ram. And Ram has decided they're going to come out with that first and push the full battery EV version of that vehicle back about a year. So they're making a big bet on EREVs here too. To go back to what we talked about with Ford, this might be a novel way to get around this big battery problem. Or let's, you know, I have not heard if General Motors is doing this, but imagine if you had that Hummer with a slightly less, you know, apartment complex sized battery and a, you know, like a gas engine in it of some kind. You kill the range anxiety. You have less emissions. I'm assuming you're pretty good on gas. And then the customer, the driver has a lot of peace of mind. And then hopefully one day we get enough charging stations and charging ports everywhere where it's like, well, I don't really need the gas engine anymore. You know what I mean? I can just move on to that.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of seen as this bridge technology. And especially for the big SUVs and trucks, like one of the big problems with a full EV truck, like a Ram truck, let's say, is that if you want to go tow your boat or your camper or whatever, it's like a huge pain in the ass. It knocks, you know, that range that you had, that 300 miles or whatever, is now like half of what it was before. It means you have to go stop at charging stations way more often. So for those kinds of use cases, regular straight up EV trucks kind of suck. And this is a way to have something that you can use as an EV most of the time. And then when you have those, you know, those rare times when you're towing something or whatever, going a really far distance, you can also use the gas engine, which is kind of a really cool idea. Like, to me, it's kind of like what I see out here in the Bay Area a lot, which is the two-car garage of like a low-range, you know, city car kind of EV, like a Nissan Leaf or something. And then like you also have your RAV4 or whatever for when you need to go longer distances. And an EREV is kind of like both of those things in one vehicle, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like this idea. I'd add another benefit is that like this lets automakers build the platforms of the future they want, which is just like, you know, super simplified, battery in the floor, electric motors front and or rear, everything's updatable by software. You know, you're not stuck in this sort of legacy way of making cars that we've talked about on past episodes of this show. With the one we did about Toyota catching up to Tesla, I'd encourage you to listen to that if you haven't. But this could be the near-term future of internal combustion. I think the drawbacks are we don't know if people are going to plug them in is the thing. And even the automakers don't like to talk about how often people plug in their PHEVs. And I think it's because they don't plug them in that often. So you know, there's a learning curve here. It's another new technology for people to learn on top of everything else that's being thrown their way right now. And it's a lot of extra complexity. Like I look at some of these companies that like haven't really figured out like decent EVs yet, haven't figured out hybrids at all. It's like, oh, now you're going to make EREVs on top of that. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I don't think we've mentioned this yet, but as they are with everything, China is really far ahead on this stuff. And it's going to be on everybody else to catch up. But I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Are people are going to buy this stuff when it hits the market? Are they going to go for it? You think it's got legs?
I don't know. I think that just like they did with PHEVs, plug-in hybrid EVs, I think a lot of people will buy them if you can get a tax credit for it and then maybe just use it like just like fill it up with gas and just use it that way. That would be way worse with an EREV than with a PHEV, because an EREV is really meant to be, you know, an electric car with a kind of gas extender. I do think consumer education is going to be a really big part of the problem. Like, it's going to be a really big challenge here, I guess I would say. It's hard to get people to switch to EVs. It's hard to get people to switch to PHEVs. And the idea that you're trying to educate people on this entirely new type of car, where it's like, I don't know, I can't really see dealers like doing an incredible bang up job explaining to people how they should use their car that plugs in and also takes gas. As much as I would like that to be the case, I don't know.
I think one thing that might help here is more and more we're seeing these car companies throw in the home charger when you buy the car, which they should have been doing from the jump, let's be honest. And like, if they keep doing that, they might be fine, you know?
Yeah.
But it is a really interesting idea. And I've never driven one. Like I said, like these mostly exist in China at this point. So like, I'm curious what that experience is like. I've no clue, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we should mention real quick that these have existed in the U.S. before. They just don't right now.
I have driven one. You're right. So give me an
example. Yeah, have you? Yeah. What have you driven?
I driven the BMW i3. I mean, that's an EREV. It's the original EREV. And yeah, it was a electric vehicle platform and everything. It had a little tiny little engine in the back for recharging the battery only. And it's that the i3 was great. It was super innovative in its time. Very much a European city car, so it only I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, like 40 or 50 miles of range with gas, and then you had to refill it. But like that's the best example. That's the best one that everybody knows about. Yeah. Jane, that can go
i3 and the Volt is technically kind of a, you know, same similar concept. the Chevy Volt. But and just to like go back to what I do best around here, which is explaining things at length, and you know, repelling our listeners. Maybe we'll end up cutting this, but just to explain,
not even remote.
EREVs. I was thinking about this the other day about how to explain it, and I thought that it would be useful to kind of talk about it like a spectrum, where on one end you have full-blown, internal combustion, ICE vehicles, we call them. On the other end, you have full EV, no gas. And so, like, the first step toward EV is just a regular kind of standard hybrid, something like a Prius, where you have gas car with a little bit of electric assistance. Then the next one is plug-in hybrid, PHEV, where it's a gas car with, an electric component that you can actually plug in, a little bit of a bigger battery, and you can actually go like 20 to 40 miles just on electric power. And then the next step would be the EREV, where, like you said, it switches. It's no longer a gas platform with EV attached to it. It's an EV with the gas, you know, the gas extender. And then after that, you have full-blown EV. So just to kind of like set the terms here. But yeah, that's it. I think we're going to see our first new EREV this year, the Ram. More later this decade, and it'll be really interesting to see if people actually pick up on this stuff and actually drive these things.
Yeah, and how they're marketed and sold too. So something to watch out for in the future. All right, fam, now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down this week. Tim, who you got?
I have a minus this week, and it's Tesla. I've been seeing a lot online about Tesla is taking a lot of the heat for what Elon Musk is doing in Washington. There's been a lot of activity around like how to stand up to this guy and how to stand up to what's happening. And there's been a lot of like protests at, or a lot of talk at least about protests at Tesla showrooms. And we've seen like Cybertrucks and Teslas get vandalized. And so it's this kind of weird, I don't know, it's something that I would have expected, but we're seeing this kind of like groundswell of real discontent aimed specifically at Tesla. And we've been talking for a long time, honestly, since he bought Twitter, about how like his persona and his views turning off Tesla owners. And now you're seeing that kind of taken to the extreme, to the point where, yeah, there's like demonstrations and people are like, sell your Tesla. You have to sell your Tesla. We have to tank the Tesla stock in order to stop this man. So it's an interesting time for Tesla. We're going to have to see if like they actually suffer from this. If people, you know, if enough noise around this company or people selling their Teslas or not buying them, like really has an impact on its ability to thrive.
There's that guy out there who's made like a killing selling those. I bought it before I knew he was nuts. Bumper stickers, yeah, to Tesla owners. Yeah. Like, he's like quit his day job. He's making so much money with those. But that's for people that have owned these cars for a while. There's a new Model Y out this year. It's heavily redesigned. It looks different. Everyone's going to know you bought it after you knew he was nuts. If you think he's nuts, you might think he's great. That's your right, obviously. I just think that if the Model Y ends up sitting unsold on lots like the Cybertruck is, like that's the ultimate barometer in my mind for like how do people view Tesla now. And if that car doesn't sell well, like the world's best selling EV and by some metrics it's best selling car does not sell well, like that is a I think that's going to be one of the biggest blows that he will have ever dealt with. And people often say like Musk is the heart and lungs of the Tesla story. It's like, well, that's a double-edged sword, right? That makes my metaphors totally there, but it is. It's like, okay, now you're seeing the other side of that. So it's going to be an interesting year to see how people warm up to that car in particular. As for me, I got a plus this week, and I'm going with Hyundai, honestly, because I'm excited to put out a bunch of stories on InsideEVs.com about the new Ioniq 5 and to definitely cover it on the next podcast. But all I'll say is at this point, you know, we drive everything. We talk to everybody in the industry. We know who's serious and who's not. Like, we can tell who's, like, serious about future technology. And like this, the new Ioniq 5 is such an improvement over an already outstanding EV that I'm like, yeah, this company's serious. Like, they're serious in a way that a lot of others aren't, or are desperately trying to be, but aren't yet. So they get a W for me this week. And I know I said I was driving home tonight to get in this pod with you, Tim. I saw like a bazillion Ioniq 5s on New York 17 coming here. Like, it's that thing is selling really well right now. So we'll see if that one can pull a repeat in 25. All right, well, that's it for us. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review, and tell a friend to tune in. It'll really help us out. And if you liked what you heard, you can find all of our EV coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.